Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Dr. John Miller taught U.S. history at South Dakota State University for 29 years. He is currently at work on a political biography of George McGovern. This weekend, you can find John Miller at the Dakota Conference at the Center for Western Studies in Sioux Falls. The theme for this year's conference is World War II Comes to the Northern Plains. John Miller, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Lori, thanks to be good to be here.
Tell me a little bit about this conference. It's been going on for quite a while. Can you give me an overview of what its intention is?
Well, I remember when I first came to South Dakota in 1974, and that spring I'm sure I went to the Dakota History Conference, it was called back then, at Madison at Dakota State College then. It got started there for a number of years, and then after 10 or 15 years, as they were restructuring the college, later university there, they were not going to have so many people in their history department that could run it. And so Augustana stepped in, the Center for Western Studies offered to be the host for it, and it's worked out very well here. For about three decades of the 48 years that it's been going, and it's now called the Dakota Conference on History. Let's see, what does it say? I think history, literature, art, and archaeology. And it's very unique from my own personal experience in that it brings together so many college professors and teachers of history at every level, with a lot of local historians, people just interested in history. Nobody puts on any airs or, you know, tries to lord it over anybody. It's just a wonderful experience for people to come and give their own papers and listen to papers that are done by other people.
So you have college students even coming and presenting maybe their first experience at that.
One of our students here, my brain is going soft, from Brookings, who's a senior at Augustana, is, I think, on two different panels, actually, and he won a prize last year and went home with a little bit of money that helps pay for his education as a result of it, because they do have several prize winners in different categories for amateurs, students, professionals, and so forth.
That's sort of an exciting thing to think about, young historians coming up, and historians have been doing the work, and professors for a long time sort of passing down that knowledge. What does it take to be a young person in that field, and what sort of skills do they need to do it successfully?
Oh, well, mainly what you need is a passion. You need a desire to want to do it. Secondly, what you need is an ability to and a desire to read, because as I've always said about history, the only way you're going to learn about history really is to read. If you read books or articles or newspapers or letters or whatever, you're not going, I mean, you can watch the History Channel on TV and you can absorb it through your eyes and your ears, but at some point you're going to want to be a reader, and then you just get some practice. You go out and interview people, you start reading newspapers, you read books, you get into documents, you come up with your own ideas, because history is not just a bunch of facts that you find and you pick off a tree or something. It's all about an interpretation and taking the evidence that is out there that you collect the best you can and then interpreting it for what it means.
Hmm. Now, you are going to participate in a couple different ways at the conference. One is through talking about the World War II Veterans Oral History Project. Yeah. Tell us about that.
I am, and just about the time you called, I am going through, I am trying to give this speech to myself down here in the basement, and I'm getting more and more worried, because I have, when I actually sit down or stand up here and am talking it, I'm going way over time. I hope Harry isn't hearing this, but I know that they will cut me off, and so I have a prepared PowerPoint here that could last an hour and 10 minutes. I think I've got it down to about 50 right now, but we're going to have to work down another 15 or 20 minutes before I go in there tomorrow and lay it on them.
Editing is always the challenge, isn't it? What is?
Well, for guys like me, it is anyway. Maybe not for everybody else.
So, what is the overview? What's the project about?
Okay, well, Harry came to me about 9 months ago, I think, and said, we'd like to do some interviews, and we have a little money to help pay your expenses. Would you like to go out and interview a number of World War II veterans and put the tapes and so forth in our archives so people can listen to them and people can do research? And I thought for a minute, and then I said, well, sure, that sounds good. And my goal was to do 36, and currently I have interviewed 31 World War II veterans from South Dakota. And, you know, they're all different. There are overlapping themes, and it's been very interesting. And obviously, if you were in the war, you have to absolutely be at least 88 or maybe 89, and most of them are in their early to mid-90s right now. And it's one of the things that surprised me a little bit was how well most of them were able to pull out of their memories, you know, a lot of specific, you know, their memories were pretty good for 90-year-old guys. I hope mine will be as good then as theirs are now.
Is it the nature of what they went through that sort of cemented that in their brain permanently, do you suspect?
Well, I think so, and I don't want to idealize this or anything and say they all were able to name names and everything perfectly, but, oh, I think so. I think that studies of memory tell us that emotion, you know, if you have some emotional attachment to something, if it's something important, and just plain paying attention to have a good memory requires us to pay attention to things at the time. And then I think a lot of it is I find myself telling the same war stories, not really, but, you know, the same stories over and over again. And I've talked to any number of people in politics and, you know, veterans and whatever the subject is. And I thought, oh, here, you know, they tell a story and you hear it, you know, it almost in exactly the same language. So I think a lot of it's repetition that that a lot of these guys, when asked questions about it, dredge out of their memory. And once you start telling a story that reinforces it in your mind, and students of the brain and brain science know that memory is not just like going back to an archive and pulling something off the shelf. It's something that we reconstruct in our minds, and sometimes, you know, we remember things that didn't really happen or didn't happen that way.
Right. Did anybody come up and tell you that they hadn't talked about something before, or were these all people who had pretty much dealt with these stories in the past?
Well, that's one of the interesting things about this whole thing. When I first started out, I thought, well, I got to find out some World War II veterans. So I did the logical thing and went down to the VFW place in Brookings, down on Main Street, and was talking to the guy. And as he was coming up with some names of people around Brookings, and I've got five or six guys from Brookings on this list, not too surprisingly. And I said something like, well, you know, I said, we should have done this 20 or 30 years ago when it was fresher in people's minds and there were more of the World War II soldiers still around. And he says, no, I don't think so. He said, I don't think they'd have been ready to talk about it then. And one of the anecdotes I've just been reminding myself of was Curtis Eggers over in Renner, whom I interviewed about a month ago, was saying that he hadn't talked about it until a number of years ago when a local teacher down at Brandon asked if he'd come into the classroom. And he said, oh, I guess I could do that. And she kept asking him back for several years, and he said, you know, that was the first time I really opened up the way I did in talking about the war, because a lot of these guys, the kinds of experiences they had were not the kind of things you really want to talk about. As guys are being shot down right and left, and as you're pulling the trigger and maybe killing someone else, you don't you don't really want to dwell on these things any more than you have to.
So what's the value of that for the rest of us, though, the veterans who not only participated in the war, but who are willing to share the stories that might be uncomfortable for them to share? How does that benefit all of us?
Well, I think it's invaluable in many, many ways. For one thing, we recognize the sacrifices they made, their bravery, their their willingness to put their lives on the line. I mean, we need to honor these guys. And of my 31 people I've interviewed, one is a woman who rose to be a captain as a registered nurse
wow.
in the Army out in the Pacific, met her husband out there and came back home to raise a family later. So we got to honor the soldiers, first of all, but it's also important to recognize that war really is hell. We say war is hell, and you can say it, but until you hear the stories, probably actually until you experience it yourself or you see movies and so forth to get some of the idea of the carnage that results. So we got to understand that, and we've also got to understand that we can't go on to, I mean, we're very fortunate we haven't had another world war like World War II, because I'm not sure how many people would still be alive on Earth. We've got to prevent these in the future.
You mentioned some overlapping themes that some of these World War II veterans yeah. were telling you. What are some of those overlapping themes?
Well, you know, I ask questions that the average person on the street is curious about, like, what did you think about the food, you know,
right.
the K rations and the D rations? And, you know, one of my guys, Douglas Starr, who lives right over there near Augustana University, actually, and grew up in New Orleans and became a college professor of journalism for a long time, wound up living here with his kids right now. But he said, you know, we grew up during the Depression. My dad was often out of work, and when he had work, he only made a dollar a day or so. So we didn't have a lot of... I was underweight when I went into the Navy at 135 pounds, and I put 15 pounds on in quick order, and I kept them on for, you know, for guys like him, you know, the food seemed to have been fine. And most of the guys, another guy I talked to over in Elkton, I was asking about this and that. I said, so did you guys get milk? His quick reaction was, milk? What the hell is milk? You got a little salty language
right.
in some of these things.
So, it all comes back, yeah.
it varied a lot, but by and large, you know, their reaction, you know, food wasn't bad when we were back in camp or when we weren't right on the front lines having to grab sea rations or something. The cooks did a pretty good job of keeping us well fed.
So let me ask you this. When we talk about World War II veterans, the obvious you know, aging of them into their 80s and 90s, the Vietnam veterans are dying at younger ages. So do we collect oral history from Vietnam veterans sooner than that? Because if we wait till 80s and 90s, there might not be, there may be many stories that are lost.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the longevity, being a Vietnam veteran myself. I hope I make it to my 90s. But, you know, it's going to be a moot point here in about 20 years. yeah, no, I think it's never too early to be doing these things, and we certainly ought to be getting the Korean War veterans now, because that was only 5 years later, to 8 years later. And yeah, talk to the Vietnam veterans right now. Well, I have a picture of myself back when I went into the Army in 1968, which was also 48. This is the 48th anniversary of my getting greetings. Please report for duty in Aurora, Missouri on October 15th, 1968.
And, that's a whole other story there, isn't it?
I was one of those guys who was in Vietnam for 12 months and 26 days, and I never touched a gun because they made me a court reporter, so I sat in an air-conditioned office behind a typewriter and typed up verbatim transcripts of trials, courts-martial. And it's a reminder, like Ernie Pyle reminds us, I'm going to try to sneak in some stuff about Ernie Pyle, that war operates at different levels, the organizational, the bureaucratic level, and at the individual level, the soldiers, the sailors, the Marines on the fighting fronts who really do have guns and are getting shot at and getting killed and shot down out of the air. So it takes all kinds, and what you want to do. Guys like me, I think, probably have a little better chance, maybe, and we certainly had a better chance to survive when we were in the war. And it's a reminder that every experience is individual, and you shouldn't make too many assumptions about what it might have been like, because you're going to be surprised when you find out what really did happen to these guys.
When you think about the conference coming up this weekend, what sessions are you looking forward to just sitting in on?
Well, I've made a list. I'm going to most, when I have an open session, I'm going to be going to, well, first of all, the ones on politics. There are two sessions on politics in the 70s when George McGovern was in the Senate, so I'm going to those. I'm going to be in on the panel on the new biography of George McGovern by Thomas Nock of Southern Methodist University. So that's those three, and then that leaves only about two or three others, and I think I've got those planned to be going to the World War II sessions that are, I think there are ten, I think if I counted right, there are 10 sessions on World War II, which is an unusually large number of sessions devoted to the conference theme, which doesn't always generate as many papers on the theme of the conference as this one does.
Huh. There are many choices to have. We'll put a link up on our website after the show, sdpb.org/Dakota Midday. And just very quickly, we might have to have you come back to talk about the life of George McGovern after this conference, and then to talk about your own work. Would you be willing to do that for another time? You want to spend a whole...
I would love to. I'd like to order him. I've been talking about this for 4 years and really haven't gotten too deeply into it, but then I talked about my small town boys book for 15 years and it finally came out. So people need to have a little patience. These things aren't done overnight, at least if you do them as thoroughly as I try to do.
History takes patience, and so does quality.
We like to think that, anyway.
If you're just joining us, you've been listening to Dr. John Miller. The Dakota Conference is, let's see, the Dakota Conference on Northern Plains History, Literature, Art, and Archaeology. We'll get the full title in there. It's April 22nd, 23rd at the Center for Western Studies in Sioux Falls. John Miller, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Lori.